Welcome in, everybody, to the first 2026 edition of the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. My name is Herms, joined as always by my good friend and co-host Tyler O. And today we are going to go over everything that happened in the 2025 fantasy football season. Yes, literally everything. We will talk about all of the things. No, I'm kidding. But we did want to take this opportunity to just kind of reflect on some of our takes and perspectives that we had, you know, sort of entering the season, you know, some of the things that, you know, maybe we picked up along the way, you know, kind of like we did toward the middle of the season with our check-in type episode that we did. So we're just going to run that back. We're going to have a lot of fun with it. And before we get into our first sort of take review, Tyler, how you doing?
Things are great over here, Herms. Can't believe this season has came and went. Just kind of wrapping things up from my end, getting the buyouts out for the leagues. Was able to take home a few championships, so that always feels good. But the ball doesn't stop rolling just because the season has come to a stop. Fantasy season, that is. We will continue churning out content here, man. So just thrilled to be able to shift gears a little bit. Not that I don't love doing recap shows with you all the time, but at the same time, it is nice to be able to talk about other things besides recapping the week prior. So thrilled to get rolling here on something a little different.
Absolutely. It's definitely going to be interesting to see us returning to our preseason form in terms of just the, you know, the shorter conversations that we like to get into. I think a lot of people are going to have fun following along the Crossing Routes podcast this off season. Once we figure out a more permanent schedule, we'll tell everybody, we'll let listeners know. But actually, I do have one thing. Of all those championships, is there one in particular that you're like super proud of? Because I know people always say, oh, nobody wants to hear about our teams or whatever. But you know what? We should flex on ourselves. So if there is one, just, you know, let me know.
So I not only took down my home lead draft league this year, for the first time since 2019 or 2018. So we had moved to the sleeper platform around like 2020, 2021. Like, I haven't won one there yet. So I think this is our 13th year. This is my fourth championship, but I feel like I'm like the maybe not the Steelers, Cowboys, where I was just basically basking on the glory days of years prior. But I was able to win my home redraft league. And then on top of that, I also won my home dynasty league. First time that's happened too. So that was great. It was great to win both sides. No one had done that before. Not every league is exactly the same, but there's like a core group of dudes who are in the redraft and the dynasty and be able to ship them both home arms. Feels great, man. Question back to you. I want to hear yours.
Yeah, I ended up making it to a decent number of semifinals, but unfortunately not too many finals. I did end up coming away with a couple titles, and the one that I'm most excited about is one, it's a home league against some local pals that I've known for, you know, super long time. And I completely ran the table the entire season. I did not lose once. I don't know how I did that. I've never done it before. I'll probably never do it again. But the fact that I get to put that on my resume now is just pretty cool. It was very fun, especially because the thing I was most proud about is that it was a team that I basically drafted. You know, I didn't make any trades. So I saw through the matrix back in August for this one league specifically. And now we are here. But, you know, some of those experiences are things that we are going to talk about in this program, because some of those player takes that I had this preseason definitely influenced some of the players that I drafted for that team and all sorts of other teams. So do you want to go first or?
Sure. Absolutely. So looking back at the season, it just naturally, my head's going to go to the quarterback position. Like, where are my wins? Where are my losses? I really tried to go back to podcasts, really went back to a lot of our written content that we'd published over at FTN. And I just kind of dug through everything to say, like, hey, what hit? What was an absolute awful miss? And I think probably one of the things that kept coming up time and time again was I was absolutely fading the hell out of J.J. McCarthy and the Vikings, right? That was something that I stood my ground on. That was tough because there was a lot of J.J. McCarthy fans out there. They're very high on the Vikings, just like yourself. Think you were higher on the Vikings team more than J.J.M., but you certainly thought J.J.M. was going to be solid, right? So I was a full fade. Didn't have him anywhere. Didn't draft him anywhere. Well below consensus. I even said this part, this is what I really wanted to highlight, because it's cool, Tyler. You faded J.J.M., whatever. But I actually had an article that was saying that he was being overvalued and you should trade him straight up for Brock Purdy or Trevor Lawrence. At the time, that was, you could have easily done that. But that's feeling really good right now after T-Law finishes as a top five quarterback and then Purdy's the number one scoring quarterback through the fantasy playoffs. So fading JJ was cool, but be able to shout out those two quarterbacks that I'd rather have that at the time were ranked below him. It's a good one, Herms. That's one I'll remember.
Just looking here at FTNFantasy.com and all of our stats that we have in our stats hub. Definitely check that out if you haven't already. Yeah, 15.4 fantasy points per game from McCarthy this year. I mean, it didn't really work. Obviously, there were tons of injuries and stuff. We still have a very small sample of games to work from. But yeah, the returns that we did get were suboptimal. It was a very bizarre season for him and the Vikings in general. And you're right. I flag planted pretty big on not just him, but also I was really big into the concept of Jordan Addison really establishing himself this year. One of my takes that aged kind of poorly, but we already covered that a little bit with yours. So I will stick with quarterback and talk about when we were doing our little rankings hootenanny back in the summer. I had made a pretty, stark case against Patrick Mahomes being in my top 12, just because the whole thing that I argued was the fact that their deep throw rate had pretty much plummeted over the last couple of years. The big plays just weren't really there in that offense. But lo and behold, by the end of the year, Mr. Patrick Mahomes, 26.7 fantasy points per game, third best among quarterbacks, and at least as far as their deep throw rate and making those big plays happen, the Kansas City Chiefs finished ninth, or at least through week 17. Obviously, we still have another week left to go. But as of this recording right now, ninth in the NFL in deep throw rate. So they brought it back. I was very wrong about that. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that, that backfield, dude, between Isaiah Pacheco and our boy Breshard Smith, who unfortunately never really took off, they just never found any answers. So, of course, they had to air it out. And, of course, there is egg on my face. I apologize, Patrick Mahomes. Good luck with your ACL rehab. All right, Tyler, you got another one in the quarterback realm?
We can keep going at the quarterback was a great position for me this preseason with the take. So just to gloss over a couple. If you're new to this podcast, this is the first time you're picking up. This is a Jackson Dart podcast. We have been on the Jackson Dart train. We have been pounding the table for him all season long. I'm not going to dive deep into that one, but just know that this was a podcast that was extremely high in Jackson Dart, the QB1 in this class, ranking him over Cam Ward. I think I'll take one more lap at the quarterback position, victory lap, that is, because honestly, it feels good. It was Drake May. I was well ahead of consensus this offseason, had him ranked in my top 10. He was a quarterback that I was eyeing in not just my super flex, but as my first QB or later QB kind of grab in those one QB leagues. I went as far as to say, you should be trading to go acquire Drake May because he's being undervalued right now. At the time, he was hanging on the outside of the top 12. Well, I think at this point in time, everyone here can agree that Drake May is indeed him, top five quarterback in the NFL and dynasty. I don't think you can make another claim otherwise. So I'll take another lap there. I promise you I'll have some L's that I'll be eating later, but the quarterback position was not a tough one for Tyler in 2025.
And I got to say about Drake May, he was somebody that we enjoyed talking a lot about this summer. And one of the interesting things about that is the fact that he didn't really do it with his legs in terms of the Konami code aspect of what he brought to the table. Now, I'm saying this, he still finished, through week 17, the sixth most rushing yards among quarterbacks. So it's not as if he didn't really run at all, but only 4 rushing touchdowns. So he didn't get a ton of value from his legs relative to what we were kind of expecting. So I think that just serves as a really big compliment to his passing acumen, especially considering just how weird the Patriots pass catching options have been. The fact that he hasn't really had too many reliable receivers to throw to. I don't think that is very true of one of my quarterbacks that I was very excited about, Dak Prescott. He had a lot of really good guys to throw to, and it was a pretty simple premise. The only thing I really argued was the fact that whenever he did start more than 12 games and didn't get injured, he finished as a top 12 guy, or well within the top 12. So, I figured if he was going to be healthy this year, he would do it again, and he absolutely did. So shout out Dak Prescott. Yeah, I think that's really all I have to say about him. You got any other quarterback stuff, or are we going to pivot somewhere else?
Let's pivot to running backs. But before I do, I just want to say I was kind of low on Caleb Williams. I don't want to walk away from every position with only victory lapping and taking some wins here. I was below consensus on Caleb Williams. I didn't think he kind of put it together. While I do think he has some work to do still as a passer, he is clearly good and has a future, very bright future here with Ben Johnson. So running back, first thing that kind of sticks out to me, and I think you and I are both eating the L here, and I'm just going to mention at the top, is We love Kenneth Walker, man. We were all about the Kenneth Walker train. We thought Zach Charbonnet was a non-factor sitting on the bench. Walker is going to be getting, what, 20 touches, 18 touches a game, and he's going to waltz into RB1 territory. That was absolutely what I said. I don't want to put words in your mouth, Herms, but we were on the same page here, and we were wrong. It really just comes down to the coaches value what Charbonnet could offer as a goal line back. He's more of like the gets the kind of tough yards, falls forwards. Walker tends to kind of, you know, jump to the side, but he has that breakaway speed. They're different running backs. I probably should put a little bit more respect on Charbonnet's name. It'll be interesting to see how free agency breaks down here. But any Kenneth Walker thoughts that I might have missed there, Herms? Because this was definitely one of the biggest L's I remember for me on the season, and I remember us being in pretty big agreement on this one.
Yeah, I was very excited about the whole Clint Kubiak thing and the fact that him bringing his scheme was going to be super good. And then we're at a point now where, again, through week 17, Seattle is 25th in EPA per attempt. That's definitely not what we were hoping for. And the funniest thing of all is that if we look right now, both Zach Charbonnet and Ken Walker are tied with an average of 13.4 fantasy points per game right next to each other. It broke even, the whole thing. It was just so... I'm going to be mad about this for a little while. I'm sure I'm going to get over it once we get to the spring and we have other things to worry about. But I think one of the running backs I was pretty excited about, I remember a lot of people were kind of worried about because is he going to get suspended because of some off-field stuff that happened this summer. But I drafted so much Quinshon Judkins. The talent was just so there for me that I was completely unbothered. Who else was going to take work away from him? They spent all that capital on him. And I think that really worked out. He had a phenomenal season, 15 and a half PPR points per game, which in this Browns offense, considering everything that went down, I think is pretty good. So that's one that I just really wanted to highlight. I think one of the lessons that we can kind of learn from that, unless it's some sort of situation where the player's arguing about like a contract, because we've seen those holdouts really affect player performance if they don't show up. But if we're only worried about suspensions or something, that shouldn't scare people off from drafting good players. That's just one of those things. You have to have that stick in the forefront of your mind. Is there another running back that you want to highlight that you had a particularly big lean on in one direction or another coming into the year?
Absolutely. So I think I'm going to give you a win, two double win here. Now, the first one that I'll kick off with is, you know, I was out on Ashton Jeanty, not because I didn't believe in him as a player. There's definitely a little more red flags in his profile than I think some people thought, but I thought he was an absolute elite back. Still very good. I had him ranked around that running back kind of, you know, 10, 11 range going into the season. Most people had him as a top five, top six back everywhere across the board. Finished as the RB 14. Now, I was not necessarily out on him for the reasons that made sense, but I was objectively out on GT. I rostered him nowhere across all of my redraft and dynasty league. Didn't get him in a single place and just thought like this is a fringy RB 1. And not a locked and loaded sure thing. Like I think the industry was really shooting out there. So, it's not like I'm thrilled to be like the circumstances, right? The bad circumstances here. It's really not his fault. Like watching him play, he belongs on the NFL field, right? But I think it's just one of those things where, you know, I find myself out on him, and you know, I think that's a big W. I avoided a bit of a landmine there.
Especially considering we saw this team fire offensive coordinator Chip Kelly early before we even got to the end of the season. And just looking at adjusted line yards, the Las Vegas Raiders dead last. Also a 26% stuffed rate that ranks dead last in the NFL. There was just nowhere for him to run. I think it was nice that they integrated him a little bit more into the receiving game as time went along. He did kind of have that nice little PPR floor for a while, but it wasn't enough. You know, I imagine there are not that many people who won championships with Ashton Jeanty on the roster outside of dynasty leagues. Maybe you pulled it off, who knows, but at least season long, probably not. I have some doubts. We're going to take a quick break, but then on the other side, we are going to continue our conversation looking back on some of our perspectives from the 2025 fantasy football season. Don't go anywhere. This is the Crossing Routes Podcast.
Yo, what's shaking, my bacon? It's your friend C.H. Herms from FTN's Crossing Routes podcast here to let you know that our partners at DraftKings Pick 6 have a deal that you don't want to miss. New DraftKings customers? This one's for you. When you play $5 or more on your first paid Pick 6 entry, you'll get $50 in Pick 6 credits. That's right. Play $5, get $50 in Pick 6 credits to lock in your picks and take your shot at big wins. Just use our promo code FTN to sign up and start playing. If you've been thinking about trying Pick 6, now's the perfect time to get in. Just use our code FTN to sign up, and all new DraftKings customers can play $5 and get $50 in Pick 6 credits. Let's build some lineups. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org in Connecticut. Must be 18 plus. Age and eligibility restrictions vary by jurisdiction. Pick 6 not available everywhere, including New York and Ontario. Void where prohibited. One per new customer. Bonus awarded as non-withdrawable Pick 6 credits that expire in 14 days. Ends January 25th, 2026. Terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Welcome back to the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. I'm still Herms. He is still Tyler O. And we are still talking about some of our takes in retrospect from the 2025 fantasy football season. And I'll pick up the baton here in the second half of the show and continue talking about running backs. One guy that I was a little bit skeptical of was Breece Hall of the New York Jets. One of the reasons I was a little skeptical was just the fact that Aaron Glenn had, you know, spoken during the summer about his desire of having the super committee. Thankfully, that didn't end up being the case. But one of the things that did end up happening was just the complete collapse of the Jets offense. I really thought Justin Fields was going to perform a lot better than he did. Now, he did have some injury stuff that went into it as well. It wasn't completely performance-based, but it was largely performance-based. And once that kind of fell apart, consistency fell apart for Breece Hall. I think by the end of the year, anybody that had him really couldn't put him into lineups. So even though by the time we got to the end of the summer, I know we talked about it a lot on the show, once the price got a little bit more affordable, I drafted him a little bit more often. But I don't know. I was scared away by it, and I guess I should have stayed scared away by it. Breece Hall, definitely one of those guys that did not pan out, all things considered.
Yeah, I mean, I'll never apologize or be mad for betting on Breece Hall. I just think he's that talented, but the situation was bad and it was actually worse than we thought it would be. So that is that. I mean, it's kind of a miracle. When I found out he finished RB17, I was like, that's better than I thought. Like, frankly, like, that's better than I thought it'd be. Last thing I'll touch on before we transition to wide receiver is Travis Etienne. This was a guy I have rostered in a lot of places. A lot of conversation. Let me remind you, folks. A lot of conversations about Bashel Tutin. We talked about Bashel. We like Bashel Tutin. But a lot of other people liked him probably more than us. People were talking about Tank Bigsby. No one really knew. Tank Bigsby, not on the Eagles, folks. He was on the Jaguars the preseason. So no one really knew who was going to be starting for the Jags here. And while I definitely kind of played the game a little bit where I was like, you know, I'll take who's ever's cheaper. I don't have a strong take. As the season progressed and as we hit August, I was very vocal about Etienne being the guy that I want to be clicking on my team. Had him on a ton of redraft teams. I was able to get him in a dynasty team prior to that with a trade to acquire him. Definitely was one of the reasons a lot of my teams did very well because he was dirt cheap and he ended up being the RB9 on the season. So really, really love the Etienne. I mean, again, I'm not going to say I was pounding the table for Etienne all offseason, but I'd say in the month of August, I'd shifted my attention to ETN, and that one worked out really well. Going to go over to wide receivers now that we've got our running backs out of the way. Want to just kind of quickly shout out some of the rookie wide receivers that you and I were particularly high on. I mean, first, Tep McMillan. I know it might sound a little crazy, folks, but he finishes a wide receiver 14 on the year. Think about that. Wide receiver 14 as a rookie. Great. I mean, over 25% target share on the team. Yes, probably need to address the quarterback position here sooner than later for the Panthers, but to finish wide receiver 14 and with a quarterback that's barely thrown for 200 yards, that's a big W. He's a guy that we're absolutely a fan of. And then got to go to Igbuka too. I know the second half of the season was extremely disappointing, but he still finishes the wide receiver 17. So we're getting Ted at 14 and Igbuka at 17. Those are two guys I know people are going to be disappointed. Some people might even call Ibuka a bust. We got to remember, we probably got him in like the eighth or ninth round, and he did a lot for you in that first half of the season. So wanted to kind of shout out those rookies here that I know you and I were both pretty high on in the offseason, and guys that we drafted a lot of that may not have directly contributed to a fantasy championship as like a league winner, but guys that were absolutely contributors.
Oh, for sure. You know, anybody that helps you out on the journey deserves a shout out. Big shout out to both of those guys. And my first wide receiver perspective that I want to talk about, I've always been skeptical of the Marvin Harrison Jr. thing, man. I stayed pretty skeptical about it, and I think it ended up being the right choice. Now, we didn't get a ton of Kyler Murray this year. He got injured, but we did sort of get to see Marv outside of that sort of environment with a different quarterback. But it didn't really make that big of a difference. He still only averaged 50.7 receiving yards per game. He had his own injury stuff as well, so there's definitely that at play, but not really much improvement. The best receiver, at least explosive-wise for longer stretches, that we got on this roster was Michael Wilson. And if we had known that at the beginning of the year, I definitely would have stashed him a lot more, especially on the end of some best ball benches. That would have been a good thing to know. But that, I don't know, man. And now we just look at where the Cardinals are going in 2026. Who is going to be the quarterback? Are they going to move on? What are they going to do with that? My whole thing was just if you have Marv, move on to something else. I don't know even how to value him in Dynasty moving forward at this point. So, like, how are you kind of feeling about Marv now that we've seen another year of it just not quite clicking all the way?
Not going to lie to you, man. This is not a problem that I have to deal with, as it is not a guy that I drafted. I'm not saying I wasn't a fan of his game, but just never came around to getting him. So I think he's a hold. Like, you're not going to sell him. His price is probably too low. But I'm not going to acquire him either. He's clearly being outplayed by Michael Wilson. I mean, respectfully, Michael Wilson is looking like a stud, but, you know, didn't have the same kind of, pedigree or a hype coming out. So I'm just holding and hoping things turn around. I mean, there might be people out there that are trying to buy, but after a couple seasons, you gotta look yourself in the mirror and say, like, is this, you know, if his last name wasn't Harrison, like, what would I keep trying at this? I think that's like an honest God question you have to ask yourself.
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons, the one place I did still have Marv, and I guess I'm kind of curious about your opinion on this trade. I think we talked about it in our group chat, but, you know, just for the sake of the show, especially, I traded away Marvin Harrison Jr., and I think it was like a bit of like a pick swap Ruski. In an exchange from the other manager, I got Ladd McConkey. Do you think that would be a sort of move that some people could, you know, look to target, like, value-wise?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair, man. I absolutely think that's pretty fair, and then just want to double tap your Marv take. I think you had him down at what, like, wide receiver 27 going, is that what you said, going into the season? Something around that, Herm. So I just, like, that was a hell of a call. I was at market with Marv, right? I was not too high or too low. You were like, nah, I'm actually extremely low on Marv. And I was like, dang, man. I mean, that's a hot take. At the time, I thought it was a hot take, man, but you absolutely nailed it.
Yeah, dude, I've got it here from our note sheet for that episode. You had him at 15 at the time.
At market.
Yeah, and you had it spot on. Wide receiver 27. So,
look at that.
Look at how that.
Good job, Herms. Good job. And then a couple other wide receivers I'm going to send us home here. So I do want to, you know, acknowledge, I can't just take all laps here, is as somebody who's extremely in on JSN, I kind of fell out of favor as we approached the season. I even mentioned him as a wide receiver that I think I'm not going to be drafting a lot of in redraft. That's obviously a massive L. While a lot of my best ball teams did have him, as I was pretty aggressive at his prices in the spring. The listeners who came on board in the summer certainly didn't hear me pounding the table for JSN, and he was indeed a league winner. So definitely got to kind of take the L there, as that's somebody that, you know, I should have been on. The signs were there. And then the final guy I'll actually kind of close on for wide receivers before I leave it to you here is Ladd McConkey. You mentioned it before. I mean, after Keenan Allen went back there, I essentially thought to myself, like, I don't know how he's going to get this big a piece of a pie. Like, I'm not sure the pie is going to be big enough for Ladd to pay off in the second round, which is where he was going after a great rookie season. And you know what's, you know, kind of funny is, while I did fade him because I was like, there's not enough pieces of the pie, he got the same piece of the pie as he did last year, man. 112 targets last year, 106 this year. Just didn't do anything with it. Didn't catch as many balls. Like, average went down. Touchdowns are only down by one. It's just, he was playing lights out, and I don't think he could sustain it. And that's kind of part of the argument as to why he was a fade. So definitely feel good. No Ladd McConkey across any of the teams, and probably worked out because he was a flex option at best that you paid a little bit too much for.
I'm really hoping that the Chargers can turn that around next year. Injuries to that O-line definitely affected things for sure, but it got gross. It got really gross. I do feel bad for people that were relying on him, but also what it did to Aronde Gadsden. I don't think either of us really had, you know, strong leans on Gadsden this preseason, but still just another one of those names where it was like, man, for a while it was looking like this could be cool, and then it just vanishes. But I'm going to round it out to a couple of quick hitters. Xavier Worthy at one point was being drafted as a wide receiver too over the summer. I don't really understand where that was supposed to come from. I did take the L on the Chiefs offense, you know, kind of doing their stuff with the deep throw rate or whatever. So I was wrong about it a little bit, but I was right about the part where he wasn't going to matter. The whole perspective was just draft Rashee Rice instead. Even the whole suspension stuff, the whatever, that proved way more fruitful than anything you got out of Xavier Worthy at any point this season. One thing that I kind of got wrong, I remember saying this multiple times, I think in articles and on this show, Nico Collins and Ashton Jeanthe had like the exact same ADP. And my stance was, I will take Ashton Jeanthe every single time. That was bad because Nico Collins overcame the fact that the Texans offense was just bizarrely weird and not very good and finished as a wide receiver one. So egg on my face for that. But the final thing that I just want to sort of victory lap a little bit is my little 5'8" friend, Wan'Dale Robinson. Who else was Jaxson Dart supposed to throw the ball to? You know, outside of Malik Nabers, obviously, who got hurt, and that definitely impacted certain things and helped Wan'Dale Robinson sort of reach some of these heights, but he got a ton of targets again. There was no other show in town, and he ended up being a usable piece for so much of this season. 140 targets. Shout out Wan'Dale Robinson for finding relevance once again. Super, super cool.
You know what, Herms? I think the tight end position is probably the last thing that I really want to talk about here, and that's definitely going to have to be Tucker Kraft is going to be highlighting the top of the board there for me. Somebody, it sucks that he went down to that knee injury, but he certainly was somebody that I was pounding the table for. I even wrote in articles that he's like the last tight end that I'm comfortable with rolling out and just having one tight end, right? And that was going to be Tucker Kraft for me. So big win there. Sucks to see that he went down to that knee injury, man. But the first, I think, half of the season, weeks 1-8, he was clearing away the tight end one. So big win on the Tucker Kraft side. Don't really have any tight ends that I was like really, I'd consider a loss. I was kind of in on Evan Engram. That was a loss. I thought, if I look at it, I'm like, the Denver Broncos needed weapons. They still need weapons, but he clearly has lost a step. I thought he was going to have one more year there. So those would be the last kind of tight end pieces I want to end it on. And don't have anything else to look back to, but just really looking forward to rolling some dynasty cake here going forward with you, Herm. It's going to be a blast as we kind of wind down from the 2025 season and look ahead and start talking prospects. Can't wait.
It's going to be so much fun. Listeners of the Crossing Routes podcast, stick with us year round. We will always have cool stuff to talk about in the world of fantasy football. Like you were saying, a lot more dynasty focus now that we're in that part of the calendar, but it is going to be an absolute blast. Make sure you also check out the content that is going to continue to come out on ftnfantasy.com. We're going to be hard at work. I already have my next article that I'm going to have to start over this weekend that you'll all be able to see next week. That's going to be super cool. And until the next time we come out with an episode of the Crossing Routes podcast, this has been the Crossing Routes podcast. Adios. Happy 2026. It's dynasty season. Think about it before we go, just to say goodbye. And staying up and sleeping late.